Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Misha Tate, and you're listening to Carson's Corner.
This is Stitch Duran, and you're listening to Carson's Corner. Make sure you stay tuned in.
This is Justin Ray Harvey, Frank Duke's student. You're listening to the best of the best shows on the web and beyond. Carson's Corner with Bob Carson.
This is Bo, the one-man army Taylor, media darling and Midwest champion of the world. You're listening to the only radio show that's hard-hitting, keeps it real, and does not pull punches. Carson's Corner.
This is the coach, Sean Tompkins, and you're listening to the best in mixed martial arts, Carson's Corner.
Okay, let's go. Yeah, g'day, this is Justin Lawrence calling from my backyard in Australia, mate. You're listening to Bob Carson, the finest investigative journalist in mixed martial arts history. Listen to his show, I love it.
Hey, this is Joey Odessa, and you're listening to me on the Bob Carson Show, the show that lets no words barred give a whole new perspective to no holds barred.
These days, it's not much fun at Bally's and Caesars in Atlantic City. The CEO is playing the corporate greed game, cutting dealers' hours, cutting retirement and health benefits, even breaking the law by refusing to bargain. Yet he paid himself $39 million last year, with plenty of perks.
Place your bet.
When Bally's and Caesars play games with casino dealers, it's not fun for anybody. And everybody loses. That's why the UAW Atlantic City Dealers Union paid for this time.
Once again, this is Carson's Corner, and my name is Bob Carson. We have none other than Dan Quinn on the line. We have a lot of listener emails, a lot of questions for Mr. Dan Quinn. It's been a while since he's been on the program. We've had some technical difficulties here with Blog Talk Radio, so we're going to get to Dan right away. If we have time later, I may talk about UFC 259 that's coming up this weekend. Three title fights. Very excited about the entire card. So we may get to that a little bit later if we have some time. But without further ado, let's bring on Dan Quinn, calling us from California. Dan,
Bob,
welcome
Carson,
back to the show. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic.
Good to hear from you.
Even though I'm like John Nash, locked up in a loony bin.
Yes, yeah, and that's really unfortunate. We'll talk more about that because you're really supposed to be out months ago, but with this whole COVID thing, it's just been a real disaster here, you know.
It's fucking everything up. Before we start, I want to put out a shout out to everybody that knows the Violin Works and a PayPal me/ Dan Mongo Quinn. That's a DanMongoQuinn. For people that know the Violin Works, $1.50 an orgasm. That'll add up to getting pure H2O famous. I talked to a patent attorney today, and he said $1,500 for a patent search and $5,900 for a patent. So I got to come up with some money because my family doesn't help.
Yeah, well, we know that our listeners will be able to help out with that, Dan. So far, you know, just want to touch a little bit about political information here. Well, actually, no, before we start, Kamala Harris, do you think she could benefit from the violin?
Kamala Harris? Oh, yeah. Her husband would benefit. It's a no-brainer. after you give her 50 to 100 orgasms, it doesn't matter how well you perform with your penis anymore. You can get in, get out, get on to something else, and not have to spend all that time trying to please her. It's already done.
Do you think the violin would help her perform better in debates next time?
I think that she would be thoroughly satiated and there would be no issues holding her back. Did she do poorly in any debates? I don't think so.
Tell you the truth, I didn't even watch the debates. But, you know, the debates really didn't matter with this whole COVID thing. I think they had one debate. You know, it was all virtual. It was just the debates really, really didn't matter this political season. Let's talk about let's get to our first listener email. It comes from Crawley Stardust. Dear Dan, I have one question about gender identity in the violin. Many people now believe that gender identity is what makes a person truly male or female rather than anatomy, and that a trans person no longer has to have a gender reassignment surgery in order to truly be the gender that they feel they are. Does that mean that the violin would work on a trans female who hadn't had reassignment surgery? Have you ever experimented with this?
I've never been with a are they talking about a female that wants to become a male and hasn't had the surgery?
Yes.
Is that what they're talking about? It would work on a female that has a G-spot. Yeah. It works on women. When I first put videos out about it, I warned people if they raped a woman with a violin, I would hunt them down and kill them because the violin takes the process out of her head and puts it in your fingers. As soon as you compress and polarize the G-spot, that gives her an orgasm. I say 1 to 2 orgasms per minute in my messages to women on Facebook and Instagram and whatnot. But you'd actually go 3 or 4, it would just wear them out.
Does the violin work based on gender identity or anatomy?
Anatomy. It's
Polarizing
the G-spot from the top and the bottom. Something that was staring us in the face figuratively and literally the entire time we've been doing it. And it just happened to fall. I was enveloped in a golden halo, like I've been enveloped in a golden halo at Notre Dame when it told me I was going to be the richest man on the planet and I was in slavery. It didn't tell me how I was going to do it. I was enveloped in a golden halo that led me to the violin. I've had visions my entire life.
Now, just playing devil's advocate here, Dan, if the violin only worked based on anatomy, do you think some people will see that as transphobic?
Some people see it as what now?
Transphobic.
I don't even understand that, and I'm a genius. The violin knows no barriers. It breaks them all. Sexually.
Where do you stand in the gender identity debate, Dan?
I'm neutral. I think that some people are born in the wrong body. I can remember my uncle talking about his brother when he was 5 years old, dressing up in his mom's outfit, you know, and acting like a woman. I think that my mouse experiment when I was 8 years old, when there was equilibrium in the population, how mice were normal, they acted like mice, and when there was too many, things went fucking crazy. You know, men turned gay. They battled women for the babies, were eating them. It was complete humanity visited upon, you know, animal species. And I think that's what's happening today. There's too many people, and I think this gay and transgender thing is a defense mechanism in this population of humans to keep the population under control.
What about trans females competing in women's sports, Dan? What's your stance on that development?
I don't think it's fair. I don't think that if they're really men, that they should compete as women. You know, that's a no-brainer. If a female wanted to compete against the men, I would be for it because I think that she would be at a disadvantage to begin with. But what do you think? I think it's unfair.
I agree. We had, there was, Eddie Goldman was pretty, I guess, close with Phelan Fox, the female MMA fighter who was originally born a male. And she did some damage to one of her opponents, but she also lost to Ashley Evans-Smith. But, I think it also depends on what type of sport it is. If we're talking about a combat sport where there's striking involved, that's you know, a little bit more harsh than, you know, say, like sprinting or some other sport, figure skating or whatever, you know?
Yeah, swimming, figure skating. I don't see there would be any disadvantage or advantage, really, kind of be neutral. But in a combat sport,
right,
it'd be like taking a football player and giving her a vagina and then saying go out and compete. You know,
yeah,
I think it's fair.
All right, next question comes from Walker Granger from Hillsboro, Texas. Mr. Carson, please ask Dan Quinn extensive questions about his time at college. What was his major? Did he take the SAT? What was his best subject? Was his friends with Notre Dame basketball star David Rivers? Let me know if you need me to repeat any of those.
You know, I actually, I wasn't friends with David Rivers, but I played against David Rivers in a pickup basketball game and was covering him mano a mano and shut him down my freshman year. I had fast feet, brother, and David Rivers had nothing on me. David Rivers had a lot of assists, you know, passing the ball off, but he couldn't take me to the hoop. And my SAT was 1232 or something like that, I think. I got a good enough SAT where I got recruited by the coach at Harvard, not to go to Harvard originally. He was recruiting me to go to Notre Dame because his son played at Notre Dame. And then he heard my SAT, and he's like, well, have you ever considered an Ivy League school? I had a chance to go to Harvard if I wanted to and turn it down. And looking back, I'm glad that every choice that I made culminated in having my two sons, because I wouldn't trade them in for the world. We're all three of us astrologically compatible. We get along great. We like to smoke weed together, and it's going to be good for our relationship, you know, as we get older.
What major and what was your best subject, Dan?
My best subject was probably government, political science. That was my major. My first semester at Notre Dame, I was pre-med, and our freshman football class had a cumulative GPA of 1.3. There was a mass exodus from the pre-engineering, pre-meds, pre-this and pre-that into, what do they call it, not special ed, but regular education, you know, instead of going to be a doctor, now going to be something like an attorney.
All right, we go to BD from Oakland, California. Bob and Dan, these shows lately with Dan have been really good. I was sad to hear that Dan is still in the nut house, but it is what it is. I personally feel they're trying to keep him from getting his message out about stevia, but when you hear what good spirits he's in, you know, they are not going to silence him. Can you please ask Dan how much longer he has to stay in the nut house?
I've been cleared to leave this place for over 3 months, and my conservator, Gina Holden, has personally taken it upon herself to keep me in here. She thinks that I should go to another lockdown facility, even though the doctors and the staff think I'm ready to hit the streets. And, you know, it is what it is. I'm going to be out this month, I believe, and I'm going to make a video showing the violin. I already have somebody selected that's willing to be in a video. Willing. I have women. I feel like the Bachelor online, homeboy. I've been having so many women come at me on Instagram and on Facebook, a lot of them fake, a lot of them for real. And I tell them, you know, I ask them, one of the first things is like, look, if I could make you come 100 times an hour, would you let me? And the resounding answer has been yes. And it's like, all right. And a lot of them probably think it's bullshit, but that's one thing that I do before I play the violin. I say, you know, there's going to be a time, you know, you think that I'm full of shit, but I'm going to take you to the first 10 or 15 orgasms, and then I'm going to stop, and I'm going to look at you, and I'm going to kind of chuckle, and I'm going to laugh, and I'm going to say, I wasn't kidding, was I? And you're going to start to respond, and before it can come out of your mouth, I'm going to put my mouth back on your pussy, and it's going to silence you, and we're going to continue with the... Anyhow, I'm the only sane one in this crazy house, brother.
Yeah, it sounds. What is somebody talking to you in the background there?
Yeah.
All right, we got a next question here from Carl Merritt, Reno, Nevada. He's got a bunch of questions, so I'll get to the first series, and then we'll go to the second one. Dan, how is your hair? You're getting up there in age, but I didn't see a whole lot of gray last time I saw a video of you. Has your hair started turning gray? Do you have a full head of hair?
I have a full head of hair, thanks to stevia. Stevia purifies water. The skin is made of water, you know. What, 60, 70, 80% of our body is water. And I can tell you that after I started using stevia, I thought I was getting a thinning hair, and it stopped it. And my hair is actually in front of my eyes now as we speak. I haven't had a haircut in damn near a year because of COVID and then being locked up. And I'm going to keep letting it go. I put it in a bun in the back. But women seem to like longer hair.
Yeah, well, I admire you because I'm friggin' losing my hair. So I guess it's, yeah.
Stevie,
you think
baby.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you.
I guarantee that if you started drinking stevia in your water, it would help out your entire body. You've done it the hard way. You're a new man. From when
yes.
I first met you. To how you are now, I wouldn't even recognize you, Bob. You were a fat blob before, and now you look like a stud. You know, tip of the cap to you.
Thank you.
But you did it the hard way, either the hard way or the stubborn way, you know, for not using stevia. But if you put stevia water, blended, poured that white soup into a cup, waited for the separation, and then used a straw to drink out the water and stop the soap, I think it would bring your hair back. I swear to God.
Hey, I'll try it, man. You know, because I've floated with the idea of hair restoration. That's, you know, $5,000-$6,000 and whatnot. But you know, I think that stevia can work if you have an open mind to it. You know, is there any correlation between stevia ingestion and one's mind? You know, or is it just does it matter?
I think that if you believe it, it greatly increases the chances of anything happening.
Yeah.
Just the power of the mind. I believe that stevia was going to make it so I wasn't constipated. And because I posted a video of people snorting stevia inside the loony bin here and put it up. And I got in trouble for it. And I got my stevia taken away for 2 months. And I got constipated. And I started taking stevia again, and like a shot in the dark, man. I don't know if that's the right terminology, but just cleaned me out, and I knew it would, you know. So I think that if you have a positive mental outlook on it and you believe it, that it's going to happen.
Yeah, I agree with you. Absolutely. Let's go to Carl's second set of questions. He asked about Ernie the Barber. What's your perspective on Ernie the Barber? I think his haircuts suck, but I bet that he's not a licensed barber, is he?
Well, you know, Ernie's not a licensed barber. I think he did go to school for a little bit. He doesn't have his license. But Ernie and I have an issue because he's driving my car now that I sold to him.
Yeah.
And I haven't gotten any weed. I haven't gotten a dime from him. And so I'll even say it on here. Either I get paid for it or I'm going to burn that car up, you know? That's my car, And if he doesn't give me, he was giving me ounces of weed for good ounces of weed, brother. Not like bunk shit, you know. Ernie is a connoisseur, and he was giving me deals for $100 buying, you know, an ounce of weed for him. And so I figured that at $100, I could have sold that car for $2,000, just 20 ounces. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And that's why I ended up in jail for 5 months up in Placer County, because I was homeless for like a day, and I was walking along, and I was near the neighborhood. And so I walked to my car and drove it out and broke down his fence, and they took me to jail for stealing my own car.
Now, have you, when was the last time you spoke to Ernie?
It's been a while. If I could remember Ernie's telephone number, I would have given him a call a long time ago. But it's 470, and I can't remember the last four. But I remember Riley Prysock's number, and I'm not going to say it on here because I don't want him to start getting his phone blown up. But I called Riley so many times from jail that I remembered it. And for some reason, I can't remember Ernie's phone number. But hopefully it works out because, you know, in a way, I had love for Ernie. We were friends for like 4 or 5 years, you know. And to let a car come between that, you know, it's not right. And he's in a wrong. He owes me for the car.
Now,
he's driving my car for free.
What's your plan to get the money or get, you know, whatever he's going to give you in exchange for the car? You're going to contact him? You're going to call him? You're going to go down to where he lives? Or
I'm going to stop by and say, hey, what's up? You know, not anything, you know, threatening, anything like that. I'm going to tell him, you know, point blank, you know, you owe me for the car. We're going to take care of it one way or another. You know, it's not going to come to fist to cuss. Ernie's too old. Ernie was a bad boy when he was younger, but he's too small for me anyways, and he's too old. But he's not going to drive that car on my dime. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And I can guarantee, just like that car will meet a fiery fate if he doesn't take care of his bill. That's all I can say.
What if he said, listen, just take the car back? Would that be good enough for you? Do you think he would still owe you for the time he had the car?
You know, if he said that, you know, because he fixed the car up a little bit, you know, he didn't do much to it, but he made it look better. He gave it I think he actually painted it with a spray can, and it looked different. It instead of being blue with the scratches, it looked like dusky gray or black, and put some car seats in it, not car seat covers in it. And it was looking all right. I'd take it back. You know what I'm saying? Because there was a time when I had four cars with Caesar Ayala living close to me. Caesar's the cars are. He started getting deals on like repossessions and stuff that was at tow yards. He got his license. And so I had four cars at one time, and then I got kicked out of my place. I got wrongfully evicted. And when I was in a hospital that my mom told me to go to, I don't know why she told me to go and check myself in. I thought that would actually make it better for my case, but it didn't pan out for anything. It turned into shit. I lost all my cars. And then the Mustang that I was driving, it was leaking oil, and I didn't realize that it was down in oil, and I blew the engine, and my mom didn't offer to replace the engine like she did for my oldest son. I'm glad that she did it for my oldest son. It would have been nice if she did it for me, too. You know what I'm saying?
We got a lot of emails on the subject of Pat Ballage. This one comes from Orlando Siddles in Portland, Oregon. Dan, on the last show you were on, you talked about Pat Ballage. I was intrigued. Please talk about him some more. I'm very interested in hearing more. Tell a story or two, if you will.
A story about Pat Ballage, me telling Pat that if he ever talked to my girlfriend again, I was going to kick his ass. you know, because I was going out with a Suzanne Michelle Roy at the time, and she snuck into the weight room. My freshman year, we didn't have a football weight room. There was a weight room that was like, it was for all sports. That's how backwards Notre Dame was when I first got there. When Lou Holtz came in, even though he was a son of a bitch and fucked people over and ruined careers, he did do the football program right. You know, the football players shouldn't have to work out in the gym with non-football athletes, from my perspective. You know, or I'm talking about like the field hockey people coming in and working out. You shouldn't have to wait for your turn on the bench for there's a field hockey person that's a non-scholarship athlete. You feel me? But,
yeah.
So Pat ran across my girlfriend and started hitting on her. And that's where I got the thing in my head. There's such a turn on, because Pat was hung like a horse. Oh boy, I sort of got people, Bobby Hodge nicknamed him Pat Baggage instead of Pat Ballage, because he hung down to his knees. And the thought of that huge cock fucking my girlfriend turned me on, you know? It really did. So that's one of my quirks. And I guess Pat played for the Dallas Cowboys for a little bit. He wasn't a star.
The Colts.
He was good enough to play in the NFL for a little bit. You know, it is what it is.
Do you think he could have had another career in pornography based on, you know, how you're describing him?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Without a doubt, you know. He was bigger than most guys you see in pornos, limp.
Yeah.
It was ridiculous. Now,
all right, we got another.
I've heard that guys that big sometimes have trouble getting it out because it takes so much blood. Now, I don't know if he would have had, you know, any issues in that area. Viagra probably would have overcome that. But yeah, he could have been a star on the male industry.
Yeah, the black version of Ron Jeremy, maybe.
Yeah, well, he could have been like Shawn Michaels, who is a black porn star. He's bigger than Shawn Michaels, I can tell you that.
All right, Dan, we got an email from Grant DiMaggio from London. Grant Dawes DiMaggio. Dan, early in your MMA career, you fought Frank Mir. Who was your coach at the time? Who was your manager? And would you consider yourself a coachable fighter, or were you too independent for your own good?
I was a coachable fighter, and before I fought Frank Mir, it was funny, my ex did a Google search on him and found out that he was a terror on the ground. And up until that fight, we were working defense against the triangle, the first time I'd ever gone to that. I should have put Frank off for about 5 or 6 fights and got used to the ground game before I fought him. Oh, I keep it down a little bit. Okay. Yeah, I'm not at my room. I'm out in the common room. And so I got to keep my voice down. Can you hear me good? Want to talk like this?
Yeah, you're good. Yeah, you're fine.
Okay. Yeah, I got caught in a triangle against Frank. We were working triangle defense for the first time ever. That days leading up to the fight, you know. And the truth be told, you know, Frank Mir likes to chunk him. He likes to throw punches. I fucked up because when we were warming up in the same room, it wasn't like most places where you warm up in a different room so you can't see your opponent. Right. I was lighting the miss up with fast hands. And so Frank, who likes to punch, came out and immediately took me down. You know, what I should have done is acted like I couldn't punch and suckered him into throwing some punches and would have fucked him up. He's a lefty that doesn't know how to fight. And I heard he's getting a shot against, who is he fighting next? Andrew Maynard? Is that who he's fighting?
I think he's in bare knuckle now. He's been out of the UFC. He's doing some sort of bare knuckle fighting now.
I heard that he was going to get a fight that an ex-world champ or an ex-Olympic champ in boxing. I thought it was Maynard.
Antonio Tarver, I think.
Antonio Tarver, there you go. okay?
Yeah.
And Antonio Tarver, for my recognition, is a lefty himself, isn't he?
I'm not sure.
Frank, if Frank's listening to this, Frank shouldn't jump up and they shouldn't hop. But he did a lot of hopping. Like, Muhammad Ali used to hop, but he was, like, moving when he did. And so he wasn't a standing target. He shouldn't hop as much as he does. He should stock, and he should throw more lefts and come back with right hooks. Because most people don't know how to fight a lefty, which is one of the reasons why Conor McGregor was so successful, because no one knows how to fight a lefty. I know how to fight a lefty. And Scott Hands of Steel Smith, if you're listening to this, homeboy, if it wasn't for me, no one would know who the fuck you were. Because before you fought Jamie Hara, you had no hands, and I gave them to you in 8 weeks. And then for some reason, maybe it was because he became friends with, he fought James Irvin, is who it was. And I fucked up, because when James Irvin stopped Scott in a fight, you know, James Irvin was walking by when he was in the cage, and I was like, no, man, I fucking kick your ass. And James was like, Dan, what's up? I want to be friends with you guys. He completely turned around on me, made me look like an asshole. And then Scott starts training with him, and for some reason, I wasn't good enough to be invited over to his house anymore. We went from being friends to him not knowing me.
All right, this comes from Dusty Dinger from Providence. Dan, has COVID spread throughout the facility you're currently residing at? I would think they would try to get you vaccinated ASAP, have they?
Yeah, I've been vaccinated, and there was a COVID scare in one of the wings, not in the wing that I was in, but a couple of people got COVID supposedly, and we've all subsequently been vaccinated. Which is one of the, I went to the front of the line being in the hospital. So that's one of the perks, one of the benefits, one of the, how do you say it? You know, one of the silver linings.
Advantages?
Yeah.
Please discuss COVID as it relates to your situation. Do you feel that stevia or any other substance might be used to treat it?
I think that stevia has such a high pH, and having a high pH is a natural defense against any virus. I think that, yes, I think that stevia would get people to add it. Stevia makes everything better, brother. Stevia is like sweet cocaine. It gives your body energy. The only drawback to stevia is it makes it hard to fall asleep when you first get on it, and that's why I was taking melatonin. Actually, I wasn't taking melatonin at first. I was just chomping on Walmart brand sleeping pills. It was so hard to get to sleep. But I figured that stevia was purifying me. It didn't matter what I was taking because it was just purifying it out, you know, in the end run. So that's the only drawback to stevia. When you first get on it, it might make it hard to fall asleep.
All right, we got one from Texas, El Paso, Texas, Darren Hoskins. What it do, Dan? How is your poetry these days? Didn't you win an award in Vegas for poetry once?
You know, what a good memory. Yeah, I did. I won an international award. I was invited to speak at the poetry convention. I'd actually booked a hotel room and was on my way to Vegas. And in the process, I got sidelined by Tigger. I can't remember Tigger's name, but I was smoking weed that was laced with LSD, and instead of going to Vegas, I ended up at the federal building, you know, and put a stab mark in my stomach with a knife. I didn't stab myself. I just put a mark, you know, and did a flop back on the ground. Don't ask me why, brother. I was fucked up on LSD.
Is it possible?
But I wrote the poem was something like this: "The wings of a butterfly." Let me think about it for just a really quick second. Yeah, it was a haiku. It was about love, being like the wings of a butterfly and being so delicate and fragile that if you didn't pay attention to the moment, it was gone, and you did win an award. But you do it as a good memory.
Yeah, he also asked, is it possible to give someone the ability to write poetry the way you gave Scott Smith Hands of Steel?
You know what? If you smoke weed, everybody gets poetic. So I think that if people would smoke marijuana and just think about poetry, that it would even make the most illiterate a poet. But giving Scott Smith Hands, I'd say here's a FYI to everybody that's listening. How to get hands is not to go out and start punching people or learning how to punch. It's learning how to do thin punches. And for the longest time, I was throwing punches at Scott, and he got good at defending. You know, the jab started off with a jab, and then started off with combinations. And within 8 weeks, Scott was fucking hanging with Ahmad Hempstead, Beebe, who was a really good boxer. And Scott went from getting his ass kicked from Beebe to hanging with him. And it was all from learning defense before offense.
Could we see more poetry from you in the future, Dan?
Yeah. You know, I was actually thinking about writing a rap song. I think my voice, you know, they don't sing, they just talk about it. And I think my voice would fit in. You know, when I hear myself on the radio, I'm like, is that really me? You know? And so I think that I could actually put some verses together and come up with a rap song. I was thinking about doing it with my kids just to fuck around and have a good time, a bonding time when we're smoking weed together when I get out.
What medications, he also asked, what medications have you been forced to take by the state? And do those medications make it harder for you to express yourself through art?
No. I take a shot once a month. I think it's Abilify. I'm 100% sure. And that's the only medication that I'm on. I was diagnosed bipolar. That's the wrong diagnosis, brother. My life has been a roller coaster, you know, at Notre Dame, on the verge of going to the NFL, you know. I mean, Lou Holtz, if you're out there, know that if you don't pay Stevie a forward, that I'm going to attack you legally and your family legally for the rest of my life, and I'm going to have the money to do it, you know. I mean, he had to kick me off the team to make room for Frank Shams, and Frank Shams ended up being a second-round draft pick and playing 8 years in the NFL. You know, don't you think that if I was an ex-NFL guy, if I was an ex-NFL guy coming out with stevia, that it would be global by now?
Absolutely.
Yeah. You know, Frank Stamps couldn't hold my fucking jockstrap. When he was a fullback trying to keep me out in pass rush drills, I ate him like he was a bitch. And I put a video out to Frank telling him that if he doesn't help me pay stevia forward, you know, I told him to play the violin. See, that's a miracle. And when her pussy attacks his face, know that he better help me pay stevia forward, or when it gets gone, I'm going to attack him and his family with money, legally, putting people next to him that hate his guts and trying to fuck his shit up like I would have done if we ever fought each other. Like, there was a point in time where I was taking a shower, and instead of being disrespectful and peeing, you know, it would go next to people's feet. I walked to the stall, and when I came back, Frank was in my stall, lathering himself up, looking at me like, huh, you know. I mean, it was obvious what he had done. It was an on-purpose type thing. And I said, I told him, I said, you want, it's a shower, if the stall is that important to you, keep it. I said, I don't fight naked. He was like, what? And his friends started to hold him back. And I'm like, they're not doing me a favor, homeboy. They're doing you a favor. I don't fight naked, you know. And that was before I won the Bingo Boss my freshman year. But I kicked this fight. He was physically, he had to take steroids to get strong enough to play the position. He was physically inferior. You know, if it came down to who ate who for dinner, it come, you know, the end of the world, I would have been feasting on roast Frank Stamps. That's how it was.
That's an amazing story. I can't believe he tried to friggin' big league you like that.
Oh, yeah. You know, it was a punk move. And one of the reasons why I didn't like Frank is because he was so good looking. You know, he was a good looking guy. And at that time, I thought I was ugly. I didn't realize that when I was looking at females and they were looking away from me really quickly, it was because I was good looking too. And then I've had people actually, I had one time when I was with my friend Jim McCranes in San Diego, we were out of the club, and this big guy wanted to fuck with Jim, and I went out there and tried to stop it, and he was like, "What do you want, pretty boy?" You know? And I'm like, "What?" And I fucking knocked him out with a straight right, you know, blazing hand speed. I want to give a shout out to Jorge Hank Rohn, who was governor of Baja California, and was Raul Julia's muse, or is that saying it correctly? Raul Julia in Tequila Sunrise. You ever seen that, Bob?
No, but I know the actor. Yeah, you're pronouncing it Raul Julia. Or, yeah.
Raul Julia played a Mexican, you know, kingpin that was actually working for the government at the same time delivering drugs to Mel Gibson, who was playing Mark Brannon. You know, that story, put it like this, if you do a Google search on Jorge Hank Rohn, his name is Hank Rohn, but his full name is Jorge Hank Rohn, do Jorge Hank Rohn / white Siberian tiger, and it'll come up that he got stopped at the border and a white Siberian tiger got taken. You know, it was a baby that was like 4 weeks old, and it got confiscated to the San Diego Zoo. I held that baby tiger in my arms at Mark Brannon's house before Mark gave it to Hank Rohn, and I'm saying, "Hello, Hank, I've discovered a miracle that's going to make me a Nobel Prize winner. Stevia slips water into natural gas, and the quote-unquote exhaust can be turned into the fountain of youth if you get all the soap out when you blend. And it's going to make me the richest man in the world eventually." And Jorge Hank Rohn has bucks, homeboy. He has the juice card to get me a cancer victim now that I could cure, and I put my life on it, that a terminally ill cancer victim would go completely 100% blazing speed healthy if they drank pure H2O. So this goes out to Mexico and Tijuana and to Agua Caliente Racetrack that Hank owns. You ever heard of Agua Caliente down in Tijuana?
No.
Okay, it's a racetrack. It's like the Santa Anita of Mexico, and or the Santa Anita of Tijuana. I don't know if there's any better racetracks in Mexico, but it's a big racetrack, and Hank Rohn owns that, and he was, I don't know how many people know, but he was the Raul Julia's character in Tequila Sunrise was based on Hank Rohn. Mark Brannon had a red cigarette boat, you know, the whole nine yards. They used to play ping pong. I played ping pong with Mark on the same table. You know, my life, they made movies about my life that I haven't been in. Now it's time for Dan Quinn to actually get famous. And the difference between then and now, then I thought that I was special. And I thought that, you know, it was okay to have class separation, that some people were made to be serfs. And now I realize that everybody's equal, homeboy. It doesn't matter if you're rich or poor or you're athletically gifted or not. It doesn't mean that it's okay for people to be homeless and hungry in the streets and for people to be living in mansions. You know, talk about slavery. I was enveloped in a golden halo and brought to my knees when I was in Notre Dame. And I had a vision that said I was going to be the richest man on the planet. And with that money, I was in the slavery that was taking place on this planet and in the slavery of women that was taking place on this planet. You know, I don't know if you know this, Bob, but women actually be at the head of the table. Did you know that?
No.
Yeah, they have ancient, you know, artifacts that were tried, that they tried to destroy, that women used to be revered as goddesses, you know, and that vanished along at the same time that spaceships came down and poured. Did you know that if you Google the pyramids in Egypt, they were poured like concrete? Did you realize that?
No.
Yeah. So the pyramids, now the pyramids in Mexico that are copying the pyramids in Egypt, that's obviously man-made because they're imperfect, you know, they're falling apart. But the pyramids in Egypt now, brother, we couldn't even build them that perfect now with the technology that we have. How in the fuck did they do that 13,000 years ago? There's no way.
Yeah.
It's the same. It all coincides together. You know, there's too many instances of flying saucers being seen, flying saucers crashing to the ground, you know, and then the technology from flying saucers, like, you know, microwave and radio waves and stuff like that. You know, there's too many people making money off that technology, not sharing it. You know, there's too many rich.
Now, it's been scientifically proven that there is extraterrestrial life. I mean, you know, that's from my understanding. So.
Oh yeah. Well, when I was 8 years old, brother, I was sleeping and I heard a thunk and I got woken up and I looked and I saw three. They were. I could tell they were greenish, but they were short and they were in spacesuits and they were walking along the back of a couch that was leading to the fireplace that had storm windows, and I could see the storm windows with, like, one of them going out the storm window, and one of them had a briefcase of some scientific technology, whatever, that he dropped, and it went funk, and I woke up, and I'm like, oh, they're real, you know, and I was frozen in place, and they were coming from, if you extrapolate the line of their leaving, they were coming from my mom's room, and that coincides perfectly from when she stopped acting like a mom and started acting like an enemy to me.
Dan, I want to move on here. We've got a email from Manhattan, Patrick Holman Hoffman. Dan, as somebody who's watched virtually all of your YouTube videos, I'd like to say to you, which video is the one that you regret posting?
Which video is the one that I regret posting?
Yeah.
I regret posting the one of people snorting stevia inside Villa Fairmont here because it got stevia taken away for 2 months and I got constipated. I really can't think of one where I regret so much, you know, because I speak the truth.
He lists a bunch, like he listed the one in his follow-up, the documentary showing you performing the violin on that disgusting-looking lady. That's his words. Do you regret that, or was that a public service?
The disgusting-looking lady on the black woman, is he talking about?
I'm guessing. I didn't see the video.
Yeah, she's not disgusting looking. She's actually pretty cute, you know. And so that shows that he might be a little racist. Do I regret posting that? I regret posting that in the wrong venue, so it got taken down as quickly as it did. I put it on YouTube, and it got it got so many hits so quickly. It was incredible. You know, it was like word of mouth, and everybody saw it, and then it got taken down. What I should have done is posted it on Pornhub, and Riley Prysock is going to film me. You know Riley from 5150 Fireway,
sure.
Right?
Sure.
Okay. Yeah, sure. Everybody knows that. Okay. He's going to fly down from, I think he's in Seattle. He's either in Seattle or he's in Oregon somewhere, but he's going to fly down. And he's going to videotape me playing the violin and then either post it up on 5150's website, or we're going to go on Pornhub but he's going to do the videotaping, and I'm going to show him how it's done.
Dan or Patrick also mentions there was a video where you showed excrement in the toilet. Would that be something you'd post over again, or would you do that over?
I showed excrement in the toilet. I don't know for what reason. I can't remember that video. Was I talking about somebody being analogous to that, or was I just talking about it? People are having hard, chunky shits. People are constipated out there. And one thing about stevia is the ease in which it makes you go to the bathroom. So I can't remember specifically what video he's talking about. Does he get more clear, or is that it?
No, that's it. He also goes on to talk about there was a video of you being verbally abusive to Treba, according to him.
Yeah, that's one video that I kind of wish I didn't go off. She pissed me off, and it was like, look at bitch, you can either, go with the program, or get the fuck out of the car. I shouldn't have getting the fuck out of the car, and I shouldn't have snapped at her like I did. But then again, she was a pain in the ass. Most women are. Most women say that men are pain in the asses, and she was being one at that point. And I was going through so much at the time. Treva was cool. I still like Treva. And Treva was good looking. I tell you what, when I first saw Treva, she was dressed up. She looked like a Hollywood movie star, homeboy. Make no mistake about it. When Treva does herself up, she looks good. I remember I was at the DMV. And I was on the phone talking with somebody, and I saw Treva. I was doing a video, I think, and I saw Treva walking along, and I was talking on the phone with somebody, and I'm like, I got to go. And so I let her, I started up my car, and I let her walk past the driveway, and then I stopped, and I asked her a question to where I knew the answer. I was like, how do you get to such and such? And I knew it was the way she was walking, hoping that she would ask me for a ride. And she did. And during the conversation when she was in my car, I said, look, I'm not, hitting on you now. Don't take this personally or the wrong way. But I figured out this technique that'll give you one or two orgasms a minute for an hour or more. And if you ever want to give me a call, I gave her my card. And within 2 days, she gave me her card or gave me a call. And it was on like Donkey Kong.
Yeah.
So.
Dan, what about there's a video. I'm sorry. There's a video of you apparently making a video during a court proceeding.
Yeah.
Were you worried the judge would find out?
No, I wasn't, because I don't think it's illegal to take a video during a court proceeding. They didn't say it was, and I never heard anything about it. And I got fucked over huge by Placer County, Huge. I don't even want to get into it unless somebody asks me a specific question on it.
Well, that may come. We still have a few more left here. Dan, this comes from Clay Kleber. Have you ever seen a guy and thought that he had some attractive traits? I know that you're not gay, but I also know from watching your video that you're very, very secure in your masculinity. I'm mature enough to admit that I've seen some men and know that women must find them attractive. What are your thoughts on what I'm saying, Dan?
Sure. There's no problem in that. You'd be a fool not to be able to see that and admit that to yourself. I see guys, and I told them, I said, I would like to go on a pussy hunt with you, homeboy. and laugh about it. And that's, broken the ice and started, I wouldn't say lasting friendship, but in that point in time, friendly atmosphere. There's nothing wrong with that. Now thinking about it and, playing with yourself, that's a different story. But there's nothing wrong with admitting somebody else is attractive, because it happens. Like I admitted Frank Stans was, handsome. And I couldn't stand him. That was one of the reasons why I couldn't stand him. you know, and then I couldn't stand him because he was giving my spot. Lou Holtz literally told me that he kicked me out the team in the spring, and that's when you win your position. And he told me that I wasn't doing the little things that it takes to be a Notre Dame football player, you know, it meaning what, kiss ass, suck dick. I don't know what he was talking about, but
yeah.
That's where Frank won his position. And the irony of that whole little dynamic right there is Notre Dame won a national championship, and they had a good defense. But Cedric Figueroa should have been in Frank's position. He was a better rusher than Frank was. He had more talent, was bigger, faster, and stronger, and was a better pass rusher. He should have been in the rushing position. I should have been in the drop-in position. Frank should have been on the sidelines. And we would have had, and with Marty Lubinkai at nose tackle or on the defensive line, playing in the Fiesta Bowl against West Virginia, if I was playing drop-in, Diggs was playing rush-in, and Marty was at nose tackle, we would have the best defense to ever step on the field in college football.
Wow. Yeah.
I'm going to give a shout-out to Cedric.
Go ahead.
Before you do, Bob, I'm going to give a shout-out to Cedric Figueroa somewhere in Louisiana. I heard he was the football coach. Do a video of Figs telling the truth about how good I was so people will get some. Yeah, if they knew that I was good enough to play in the NFL, I might get more traction and people following my story. And the fact of it was I could have walked on. And if I walk on to the Raiders, here's a question, Bob. When I flip a coin and it comes up either heads or tails, whatever it was, boxing, and that's when I chose boxing, I did that figuratively because when I got fired for making the play, I immediately quit football when I was on the sidelines. But if I walk onto the Raiders and I can catch Jim Brown from behind running and I'm putting guys out of practice for concussions and I'm kicking everybody's ass in the locker room if they have a problem with me, do you think I'd make that football scene?
You should, yeah.
Oh, yeah. There's no doubt about it. Al Davis loved speed. You know, he loved the fast guys. He loved Cliff Branch. He loved Lester Hayes. And he would have loved me. I was fast enough to catch Tim Brown from behind. I had more top-end speed than Tim Brown did. There was a play, and we were playing a game against each other, where I dropped Tim in the backfield for like a 12 to a 14-yard loss. And in that same series, they ran a sweep away from me. And they rerounded like five times, showing me gaining ground on Tim as he's running for a touchdown. Now, in high school, I would have jumped that play and caught him before he got a touchdown, but I didn't want to get my ass chewed out, you know, for like recognizing a play and breaking the defense before it played out. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, absolutely. All right, we got a few more, Dan, and then we're probably going to have to wrap it up. We're coming on at the top of the hour here. This one comes from Mitch O'Neill. It's about the music. Dan, let's talk about the music life. How has your musical taste evolved over time?
My musical taste has always identified with black more than white, and I've identified – I'm an albino homeboy when it comes down to it. I identify with blacks more than I do whites. I actually put a couple of videos recently up to the Black Panthers and the Mozzie, and I actually got a threat from somebody who said he was with the Aryan Brotherhood saying the quote-unquote, the brand is going to tax me with interest. The brand is the Aryan Brotherhood behind bars. And I said, you know what? They better bring their best and they better bring a body bag because someone's going home. Or someone's not going home. I was saying it.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Do you have a favorite singer? Do you have a favorite guitar player or a favorite band, Dan?
No, I like it all. I couldn't tell you. I used to love Sublime before their singer died. Sublime.
Uh-huh.
I don't practice Santeria. I ain't got no crystal ball. But I had $1 million. Well, I spent it all. Yeah, I love that song.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I love Sublime, too. How could anybody not like Sublime? You know, he died, too, yeah, as mentioned. He was a California, and God rest his soul, Bradley Knoll.
Heroin, wasn't it? Too much?
Yeah, heroin overdose in the hotel room. Yep.
Yeah, too much, too pure.
All right, we're going to wrap up with at least these two more questions, Dan. Dan, did you ever get to meet Tara Chow in real life?
No, I never did. I never found that. Now, I talked with her many times, so I know that there was a female behind the person, the account.
Yeah.
But I don't know if she was real or not. I have no idea, and I never did.
She was supposed to be a Brazilian jiu-jitsu black belt. Is that correct?
She was, you know, I can't even remember if she was or not. She was in jiu-jitsu. Go ahead.
Yeah. No, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, I just wanted to put the shout out to anybody that's played the violin. That tag at PayPal is PayPalMe/DanMongoQuinn, and if you've experienced an orgasm for 50 or 100, even a quarter for orgasm at 100 is $25. And don't you think somebody would pay, if they had never experienced it before, Bob, don't you think somebody would pay a quarter for orgasm if they could get 100 for $25?
Of course.
Yeah, that's a no-brainer, you know. And everybody's money, that if they keep track of the donations, I'll triple it when I'm making money from Pure H2O. That money will go to help finance a car. I need a car. I don't have one. When I find somebody that has cancer, I'm going to need transportation to get to them. That money is going to go to buy stevia to help cure them. And it's not going to be used to fuck around, except if I used to buy marijuana, but marijuana is an integral part of my being, old boy. I say, what? Have you ever smoked marijuana, Bob?
No, I haven't.
Would you do it? Would you eat a gummy bear that has THC in it to see? Okay, well then, somebody out there, please send Bob a gummy bear that's packaged and he knows it's 100% healthy. He's not going to get fucked up taking it, because it opens your mind, brother. As smart as you are, it'll make you smarter. It'll make you see things. It just makes everything better. And if everybody was on marijuana, there would be no fighting. There would be little competition, you know. It would just make everything a better place in general.
Well, it's good that the opposition to marijuana is dwindling. It's practically legal in my state. We have, you know, the voters decided that it's best to decriminalize it, basically make it legal, and this is happening all over the country, thank God. I'm going to leave everybody with this email. It's about Lou Holtz. It reads, Dan, now that Lou Holtz beat COVID and has also received the Medal of Honor from President Trump, do you feel that he won and you lost? The fact is, where I sit, he was actually a great coach. Sure, he's not 100% perfect, but what did he really do? I mean, you personally had a bad outcome with him, but there was anyone else who did? No offense, I'm just saying how I see it. That's Johnny Banfield, Boston.
Oh, yeah. When I was my freshman year, the summer before my sophomore year, I was in a huge gym in Minnetonka, Minnesota, that my girlfriend, Suzanne Michelle Roy, was a member of. And I was working out, and I had my Notre Dame shorts on. And a guy that had Minnesota shorts on came over and started talking to me. And he warned me about Lou Holtz and told me what a fucktard he was and how he fucked everybody over. And I was thinking, I'm too good for that. I'm too good. Because, I mean, after getting 6.5 sacks in the 86 spring game, I had pro scouts telling me that I was first round potentially high first round. And I knew that. I knew that from practice. I knew that from games, you know. But I'm not the only one that Lou Holtz fucked over. Lou Holtz fucked over Cedric Figueroa by moving him to drop in. So Cedric Figueroa wasn't a second-round draft pick, but Frank Sands was. He fucked Marty Lippincott over. No one's ever heard of Marty Lippincott. Marty Lippincott never made it to the pros. And I saw Marty Lippincott kicking Tony Siragusa's ass in high school. And Marty Lippincott stopped USC on first and goal inside of the Coliseum when Tim Brown, I don't know if you remember that game, Bob, but Tim Brown had a big punt return, and then we kicked a field goal at the end of the game to win the game. Marty was integral in winning that game. Marty would have been a household name had he gone to the NFL, but he never got a chance. There's so many people that Lou Holtz has fucked over. No one that coached with him liked him, and no one that played for him really liked him. Lou Holtz is an asshole, and Lou Holtz is lucky that he's still alive. If I would have gone pro and had the money, if I would have gone pro and had that kind of money, I would have had Lou Holtz killed. And if you do me a favor, Bob, when you get a chance, Google search Jorge Hank Rone / Siberian Tiger, and it'll come up, and it'll come up with, you know, that Hank Rone is the son of Jorge or another big-ass name in Mexican politics, and how it says drugs, murder, and something else, you know, that he was accused of but never convicted of. And if I would have had that kind of money, Lou Holtz would have been one of the first ones to go. So Lou Holtz is lucky that I didn't choose football, that I chose boxing. He's lucky that I got Rodney King and fucked over in Miami. Because if I would have touched money and with my ties to the criminal world, Lou Holtz would have been the first one to go. You know, he's had a Lou Holtz is a cheater. He fired me for saving 6 points. So he was throwing that game. We lost that game. We should have won that game. He threw the Cotton Bowl. We should have won that game. He started John Foley, a defensive tackle. John was a linebacker that was hurt the entire year, never practiced. But he starts John at defensive tackle against a first-team All-American. Are you fucking kidding
me?
And he wanted to win that game? No, Lou Holtz is a cheater. And Lou Holtz might have won in the short game, but I'm going to be here for a lot longer than Lou is. Lou's old. He's not going to be here. He's not on stevia. He's not going to be around. And I'll assassinate his character to where his kids and his grandkids are embarrassed to be a part of his genealogical, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, if it came down to Cro-Magnon and, you know, the strong win and the weak don't, Lou Holtz would have never passed his genes on.
Well, we'll leave it there, Dan. Real quickly, give people your PayPal address and anything else that you want them to know about you, where they could follow you, and we'll have you on the show again maybe in a week or so as the listener emails come in.
Okay, that sounds good. Yeah, my PayPal is PayPalMe, Dan Mongo Quinn. And like I said, pay a dollar, and when I'm making money, I purate the world. You get $3 back for every one that you paid. And then I have a cash tag at Cash App, which is $, a big D, Dan Mongo Quinn 55.
All right, great. Thank you so much for coming on the show, Dan. We wish you the best of luck. And again, I'll talk to you in another week or so as these listener emails pile in, as they always do. So thank you very much. God bless you, Dan, and have a good night.
Bob, thank you very much. God bless you, and congratulations once again for being a new man, homeboy. I mean, I take my tip of the cap. You have completely changed. If people wouldn't even recognize you, if they haven't seen it happen slowly.
Well, Dan, I thank you for planting the seed in my head all these years. You and I have known each other. You have been upfront and very passionate about my health and my body, and it's definitely rubbed off on me. And I thank you for all that you've done, Dan. And God bless you. Like I said, man, have a good night. We'll talk to you sometime down the road.
All right, Bob. Likewise. Take care. Good luck. I'll talk to you later.
All right. Goodbye. All right. That was Dan Quinn. That was great, man. That was a great hour and 10 minutes, man. I had a good time. Got all the listener emails in. A lot of intrigue out there about Dan. And seems to be doing very well. And if you want to friend me on Facebook, facebook.com/BobCarsonMMA. You can follow me on Twitter.com/BobCarsonMMA. And also Instagram.com/BobCarsonMMA. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. Until next time, show some respect.